What happened last time?
The first one of the king.
Yes. And Krishna.
Coming out very pale from the cave.
Prison.
Prison. I don't know if he made it into a
cave. Maybe, because there's a mountain. Because it was called, what is it, Gudi Gudi Bala. Not Kingdasha, but Mount. Somehow he imprisoned so many of them. Many. Must have been a big cave. It was a cave. Must have been a big prison. If it was a prison. And what? Thank you. What else did? What happened after that? I don't want to be king anymore. They've already tasted the bitter ashes of trying to attain something in the material world and tasting the reactions for the troubles they gave others to. What else?
Krishna responded.
How did he respond?
He assured them that fulfillment of their desire to remember him.
Yes, that was their desire and their prayer view. We want to remember you. And then what did he tell them? What did he do next?
Dressed
them up, fed them, treated them like kings, gave them chariots, gave them instructions on how to rule the kingdom so that they would remember him. And he sent them home. And what did he do? Yeah, he was in what city? Do you remember what city? Yeah, he was in Delhi, Hastinapur. So then, Yudhisthira, when he saw Krishna, when he first he heard the kansa, he understood that the three had returned, and all the that means they had been successful. Because if they weren't successful, none of them would have returned. It was either Tarasandha didn't return, or they didn't return, and they were the ones who returned, of course. Krishna, when Krishna's there, there's always going to be success. So this is what Yudhisthira said. Here's the first verse, which is introductory to Yudhisthira's four prayers. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus heard of the killing of Jarasandha, because they explained to him what had happened, and also, how many days did they fight for? 28 days. Means 1 month they fought. And the difference was they didn't fight day and night like with Jambavan. So that was 17 days or 28 or so. But not day and night. So half time, they took a break. And then they acted, they treated each other with respect. So having thus heard of the killing of Jarasandha and also of Omni Krishna's wonderful power, Almighty, Vibhu means the great and powerful one, but Almighty, that means all-powerful. That means he possesses the opulence of strength to an unlimited degree. I mean, unlimited strength is really strong. That means there's nothing that's beyond your capacity to do. Everything that can be done is within your capacity. And then also, after you finish something, you haven't lost any of your strength. After you've done something, you still have the same unlimited strength, because if it diminished any, if it got smaller when you're doing something, then it wouldn't be unlimited. So that's strong, unlimitedly strong. Almighty Krishna's wonderful power, how he displayed. But it's not only having unlimited power, almighty power, it's how you display it that makes it wonderful. So look how Krishna, how did Krishna display his wonderful power in the last chapter? Yes, but that one could say was all-knowing. It's quite wonderful if you think about how he displayed it. After he instructed the kings, this is what he did. He engaged male and female servants in bathing and grooming them. The king had King Sahaja honored them with offerings of clothing, jewelry, garlands, and sandalwood paste suitable for royalty. He had them properly bathed and adorned. Lord Krishna saw to it that they dined on excellent food. He also presented them with various items befitting the pleasure of kings. And then, kings shone splendidly their earrings. Now they had earrings, and they were effulgent. And he arranged for the kings to be seated on chariots drawn by fine horses. So there were 28, how many thousands kings? 20,800, was it? So, and each of them had chariots drawn by fine horses. So at least there were two horses, right? So at least there were 40,160, yes. At least, so that was a lot of horses too, and not only that, they had jewels and gold. So if each one of them had one ring, one gold ring, that was so many gold rings. But he gave them more than one, because ordinary people have one ring or two rings, but they were kings, so jewels. So there's so much power there. And he arranged all these things because it takes so much power to arrange anything. You have to have power over the Sahadeva in one sense. You have to have the ability, obviously, the ability to be able to do these things to that area. So many jewels, so much gold. And then he pleased them with gracious, sweet, kind words. He had the power to please them. So when we think of someone has unlimited power, what emotion usually first comes to our mind?
Fear.
Fear, yes, I was thinking the same thing. Because he could have crush us like that, but no problem, not even just with his little finger. Look at how Krishna uses his unlimited power. And he also invests it. Bhima is the son of which demigod? By air god. And where does the air god get his power from? From Krishna. Ultimately, all power. He's the reservoir of all power. So in every sphere, Krishna is acting. And he does these things. and not ordinary ways, just gross uses of power, but in very wonderful ways that are very pleasing to everyone's heart, pleasing to the consciousness. And the result of this was the liberated from all difficulties by Krishna, the greatest of who is the greatest of personalities. The kings departed, and as they went, They thought only of him. This was what they had wanted. So he acts in such a wonderful way that he captivates our minds so that we actually experience something of his pastimes and his deeds. We too won't be able to think of anything else. So they thought only of him, the Lord of the universe. So his name is the Lord of the universe, is Jagat Pate. Pate also means the protector, because Lord means protector. Pati means the protector. So that also is interesting too. That Lord doesn't mean the all-powerful Lord doesn't mean the all-powerful crusher necessarily, but he means the all-powerful protector. So if the Lord, the Almighty Lord, is going to use his power, almightiness, to crush us, then we're afraid. But if you think of him as the Almighty Protector, then there's great relief and security, because then he has the power to protect us. Because who can Radhe Krishna Madhe Krishna Radhe K, if Krishna wants to protect us and he's all powerful, who can harm us? So this is the primary quality of being a devotee, is seeking the protection of Krishna. And if we seek the protection of Krishna, and we become fearless. So Yudhisthira heard of the killing of Jarasandha, Krishna's wonderful power, and therefore he began to speak to the Lord as follows. And he spoke his great pleasure, because that all-powerful, unlimited Lord, Almighty Lord, was standing right in front of him. So when we think of someone being almighty, and he has unlimited power, we would think, if we're using our material intelligence, that if he has a form, that would limit his power. And because of that type of reasoning, that materialistic reasoning, people become impersonalist, or they think they can't understand something about God. They think they can't understand anything about him, and they see him as completely mysterious, and indeed he is mysterious, but they think that he's unlimited, inconceivable, it's intisakti, inconceivable potency. So naturally, that something that's inconceivable is mysterious. But he's inconceivable and mysterious doesn't mean that doesn't have a form. It means that his form is inconceivable and mysterious. That he's unlimited doesn't mean he has a form, but it means, especially in this case, that his form is completely mysterious. Why is Krishna's form mysterious? It's because it's unlimited, even though he's in a form. So that means the boundaries of the form don't limit him, because a boundary, like we say, this property has a fence around the boundary, so that limits the property here, where it ends and where it begins. But Krishna has a boundary, because form means having a boundary, but still, he's still unlimited, so that's quite mysterious. Because if he's unlimited, just like if this property had a boundary that was unlimited, then first of all, the rates would be very high. They'd be very happy, yeah? But second of all, could you have neighbors? Couldn't have neighbors, but they would all complain. And what happens if two people had unlimited boundaries? Big problem. You would be saying they're on your property, and they would be saying you're on their property. So Krishna is very mysterious. He's all mysterious, but yet he has a form. He's not only mysterious, but he's a sentient and conceivable. So here are the four, 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, 5, the four prayers that Yudhisthira offers. Yeshus Trilokya Gurava Sarvaloka Maheshwara. So there are Triloka, means there are three worlds, basically. That's a way of saying the heavenly planets, the earthly type of planets, and the lower planets, lower type of resonance. Sarvaloka Maheshwara, you are the that there are all the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds. That's Yeshus Trilokya Gauravas Sarvaloka Maheshwara. Together with all the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, they carry on their heads your command, which is rarely obtained. Now, what does that mean? They carry on their heads your command. Yeah, whatever he says, it is it rules. But carrying on your heads means something more than it means they respectfully carry on their heads as worshipable. And the Krishna says, and he says, and the last part I didn't read. All these personalities, the exalted spiritual masters, and the inhabitants and the rulers of the various planets, they carry in their heads their commands, which is rarely obtained. So it's very fortunate to get a command by the unlimited Lord. The Prabhupada renders Maharaj Yudhisthira's statement as follows. My dear Krishna, an eternal form of bliss and knowledge. So Krishna's form is composed of bliss and knowledge. What's opposite of bliss and knowledge is opposite of bliss is what? What is, how would you say that in English?
Misery.
Yeah, misery, and the opposite of knowledge is ignorance. So misery and ignorance, that's the opposite of Krishna's form, and in many ways that defines our forms. And how is our form miserable? The older you get, the more ways are invented for it to be miserable. You know, one devotee once said that to me. Just imagine how much pleasure you can get from the big toe of your foot. And then just imagine how much misery you can get from the big toe of your foot. I mean, take hammers and freaking nails or whatever, vices. So therefore it becomes clear that the body is made not for pleasure but for misery. So, and ignorance, how is the body ignorance, material body?
You have to sleep, put it to sleep. So it's in consciousness.
It's an illusion. In what sense is the body an illusion?
It's in my things, whatever is not real, things.
The body doesn't think, does it? So we are in the illusion thinking the body is unconscious, actually. And we're in the illusion thinking the body is consciousness, or the body is ourselves.
It's very heavy to carry it around.
What?
The prophet says you can travel, you only can travel at speed of mind.
Steady? by its very nature, extremely dirty.
And it's going to use my date.
For a date. And also, we're not conscious of it. The body has no consciousness. That's one of the things that computers make you do. It takes your consciousness completely away from your body. Instead, you just become a mind, a floating mind. Yes? You what?
Oh,
you bet. Well, that's why.
Exactly.
And your eyes. You two are amazing. You don't have glasses and you're all day on computers. How is this possible?
I once
there was one man in a computer shop and he was all day long fixing computers and this and that. And I asked him, what? He didn't have glasses. So I said, what's your secret? How is it possible you don't have glasses? All day long you're staring at a computer screen. He looked at me and said, contact lenses. No, it wasn't a secret without, because now I knew. But we're not conscious of our body, and that's what happens. So that lack of consciousness means ignorance. We forget the reality that we're sitting in a body somewhere. It's just a vehicle, actually. Like when you're driving your car, you're not conscious of the wheels, you're not conscious of the what's going on in the carburetor and the combustion of the engine. So really it's the same kind of thing, clearly just like a vehicle. And you sort of have an approximate consciousness of what the car is doing, what the vehicle is doing. You're not conscious of everything. Ignorance of it.
When you think it's damaged, you're in total shock.
And then you really regret that you didn't feel conscious of how the motor was sounding or how it was just that, and you didn't repair it last time and it was checked up and really upset.
You just get a little bit of damage to one layer and you're in total shock.
Talking about the body or the brain? Or the gutty? Gutty of the body? Yeah, one little layer. Same with the car, though. And then when it starts breaking down, because an old car, what's going to happen? It has to break down. So then when your car gets old, what do? Get a new one.
Upgrade.
Or downgrade, depending upon... You can pay for the last mile.
Actually, first you get the fine for it.
Starts rattling, making funny noises.
Things fall off.
Huh?
Things fall off.
That reminds me that one time Giridhari Swami told me, one time he was in an Air India plane, and the plane was on the runway. The door fell off. he was on the plane. It wasn't just a story. It's the kind of thing that people talk about. But he was on the plane. But at least, you know, in India, because people are so tolerant. So when something happens, you just able to just sort of look the other way. But at least they stopped the plane and put the door back on.
Like 3 months back, there was a news. They put three passengers more than what the capacity of the plane was, so they were standing up. Near the toilet, they were standing up.
one of.
Oh, my
I mean, I think it was Bombay to Bangalore or something. 1 hour or so.
Right? Usually they would say, the same one group part of the seat. That's amazing. But that, but I went on Bangladesh Airlines, that was even more fun. Because the people, it's like a bus. So everyone has their luggage in the aisle. Chickens and.
Because the only way you can get from one place to go to Dhaka, and you have to get an airplane through every other main city. So if anyone needs big transport, they transport everything.
So many people. Anyway, Giri Dharakaswami was on that plane. Mm. That was true. Yes. Good point. It's very dangerous. Especially if you have, your seat is near the door.
I think once it's in the air, it doesn't matter whether it's near the door or not.
No. Everyone's sucked out by the air. Anyway.
Crash. Just two of us.
We're talking about old vehicles, especially when you don't maintain them.
The pictures falling off.
Like
teeth,
doors, so many things.
Here.
Here's the purport of this verse. Does anyone remember what verse it was? Or is it about? All the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, together with the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their heads your command, which is rarely obtained. So the Prabhupada read this purport. Yudhisthira's, or as Yudhisthira's statement as follows. My dear Krishna, O eternal form of bliss and knowledge, all the exalted directors of the affairs of this material world, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and King Indra, in other words, the topmost directors, are always anxious to receive and carry out orders from you. And whenever they are fortunate enough to receive such orders, they immediately take them and keep them in their hearts. As they cherish them. Second verse. That you, the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, accept the orders of wretched fools who presume themselves rulers is a great pretense on your part, O all-pervading one. But of course, I'll read the verses and we'll go back and read the book. But of course, the power of the absolute truth, the Supreme Soul, the primeval one without a second, is neither increased nor diminished by his activities, any more than the sun's power is by its movements. O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotees make no distinctions of I and mine and you and yours. This is the perverted mentality of animals. So what's he talking about here? Why is Yudhisthira saying this? What is the point here? That you are the great demigods cherish your order and obey your order. But yet, we, wretched fools who think we're the kings, we give you something to do, and you do it, and you follow their orders, you follow our orders. So this is a pretense on your part, this is a pretension. You're making believe that you're subordinate to the king, but actually you are above every king, every ruler. That was the second verse. Then, of course, the power of the absolute truth, the supreme one, is without a second. It neither increases nor diminishes by his activities. So when you subordinate yourself before the king, that doesn't decrease your activity, and if you lorded it over the king, showed him that I am the Supreme, not you. And this doesn't increase your position and your power. And he gives an example. The sun's power doesn't change. Some days it shines, seems to be very warm and shining brightly. Another season it's not at all like that. But the sun's power doesn't change at all. So your position is above all that. And even your devotees don't think in terms of I and mine and you and yours, or to speak of you. So when you kill someone like Darasandha, well, battle on one side, it doesn't have anything to do with the superficial understandings. We Prabhupada's, or the purports over here, mostly they're what Prabhupada writes. This is to, you accept the orders of wicked fools who presume themselves rulers. Yudhisthira says, this is Prabhupada's words from Krishna. Oh Krishna, you are unlimited. And although we sometimes think of ourselves as royal kings and rulers of the world, and become puffed up over our paltry positions, we are very poor in heart. Actually, we are fit to be punished by you. But the wonder is, instead of punishing us, you so kindly and mercifully accept our orders and carry them out properly. Others are very surprised that your lordship can play the part of an ordinary human. But we can understand that you are performing these activities just like a dramatic artist. And the third prayer. About the power of the Lord doesn't decrease or increase by his activities. Still, Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, Yudhisthira said, your real position is always exalted, exactly like that of the sun, which always remains at the same temperature, both during the time of its rising and the time of its setting. Although we feel the difference in temperature between rising and setting sun, the temperature on the sun never changes. You are always transcendentally equal poised, and thus you are neither pleased nor disturbed by any condition of material affairs. You are the Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, and for you there are no relativities. The sun is always at a constant temperature. Srila Sridhar Swami quotes a similar statement from the Vedic mantra, the Kamana Vishnu Kaniyan. Two Brahmanas and one Upanishad, where that verse comes. He is not increased by his activities, nor does he become lesser. As explained here, King Yudhisthira, the Lord is one without a second, that means he's unequal. There is no other entity in his supreme category. There can't be another entity in his supreme. What is the name of his name? In Sanskrit, that means no one is equal and no one is greater. Asama means, sama means equal, asama means no equal, and udva means higher or better. So asama udva, no one is equal to him and no one is better than him, because you can't have two supremes. There is no other entity in his supreme category, and thus it is simply by his causeless mercy that he agrees to carry out the orders of his pure devotee like Maharaj Yudhisthira. This is causeless mercy, but also we can see it is, this is where he gets his pleasure from, because he's defeated and controlled by his devotees' love for him. So from the point of view of philosophy, it is his causeless mercy. From the point of view of his relationship with his devotees, this is his pleasure. There is certainly no loss of status for the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he thus extends his causeless mercy to his surrendered devotees, like Krishna drives the chariot of Arjuna. So people could think, and how could this be God? How could the Supreme be the chariot driver? But if he wants to engage in this activity in service to a devotee, his position doesn't diminish from being the Supreme. And then Yudhisthira said, Navai Dhajitya Bhaktanam Mamahamiti Madhava Tvam Dhavetti Chidananadi Pashurami Vavai Kriti. O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotees make no distinction of I and mine, you and yours, for this is the perverted mentality of animals. Purport. An ordinary person thinks, I'm so attractive, I'm so intelligent, and so wealthy, that people should simply serve me and do what I want. Why should I obey anyone else? Sounds like me when I first wake up in the morning. No, it doesn't. I'm not so attractive and intelligent.
Oh, wealthy.
Oh, wealthy. At least why should I obey anyone else there? This proud separatist mentality is also found in animals who battle one another for supremacy. Such a mentality is conspicuously absent in the mind of an advanced devotee and is certainly absent in the sublime, omniscient mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, what does that prayer have to do with the previous one? His position isn't diminished. His power when he serves, nor is it increased. And then, talking about his mentality. Because when he acts, and does anyone want to say something? Because when he acts, he kills Jarasandha. So why did he kill Jarasandha? Okay, two kinds of devotees. One is the kings, and the other is Yudhisthira. So he came to protect and save the kings, and he wanted to serve Yudhisthira so he could be the emperor. So one could think that Krishna is showing favoritism. Here are my devotees, and Jarasandha is my enemy. He doesn't surrender to me, so therefore I will crush him. And that way we'll teach him a good lesson, because he's inimical to me, and I'm all powerful, and I'll show him. But Krishna isn't thinking like that. If we were in the position of Supreme, that's how we would think. But that's not the way he thinks at all. He does, because even in his activities are full of goodness. He's the Param Satyam. So this is an ignorant mentality. So, of course, exactly how he thinks is, unless he reveals something, it's impossible for us to understand, because his consciousness is obviously so far above. He's composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. But we can understand he's not thinking like that, and that he has named dresos dina priya. He's giving everyone what they desire. He's not inimical with anyone, and he only has affection for the living entities. But he's reciprocating with them, and everything that he does ends up being for the benefit of even the one who he kills. But it's interesting that he didn't kill Jarasandha directly, because those demons who Krishna kills directly become liberated. But he didn't kill Jarasandha directly. But the fact is, he killed him indirectly. He was the one who killed him. And also, someone like Jarasandha, he's not an ordinary person. He's seen Krishna in front of him. He's one of Krishna's associates, practically speaking, but has a role to fight with him, especially, as we'll hear even in this chapter, another one of those persons. And that's why this is very important, because this comes up in dealing with Sisipal later on, that Sisipal acted inimically to Krishna, but actually Sisipal's position was he was a gatekeeper in the Vaikuntha planet, so had been cursed. It's explained in the third canto of the Bhagavatam by the four Kumaras, Sisupala and Dantavakra, who was killed just a little bit later, 78th chapter. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of his prayers. Sukadev Goswami said, having said this, King Yudhisthira waited until the proper time for the sacrifice was at hand. That means he was waiting in the springtime was the proper time to perform the sacrifice. Then with Lord Krishna's permission, he selected suitable priests, all expert authorities on the Vedas to execute the sacrifice. He selected Krishna Dwapayana, that's Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is more like a title, it means the compiler. But the specific name of this particular Vyasadeva is Krishna Dwapayana because he was born in an island like Navadvip, nine islands, Dvip. So Dwapayana means that he is up on the island. Bharadvaj, Sumantu, Gautama and Ashita, along with Vasishta and Chayavan, Kanva, Maitreya, Kavasa and Tita. He also selected Vishwamitra, Vamadev, Sumati, Zaini, Kattu, Kaila and Parasara. Parasara was the father of Vyasadev, as well as Gauga. Gauga Rishi was the priest of the Yadu dynasty. Vaishampayan, who is famous as the speaker of the Bhagavatamrita. Very connected with that. Bhaktava, Kashyapa, Domya, Nama of the Bhagavas, Suri, Vitahotra, Madhuchanda, Virasena, Akritavrana. They acted in different positions in the sacrifice, different capacities. Okay, others who were invited included Drona, Bhishma, Kripa, Dhritarashtra with his sons, the wise Vidura, and many other brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, all eager to witness the sacrifice. Indeed, all the kings came there with their entourages. The Brahmin priest then plowed the sacrificial ground with a golden plowshare and initiated King Yudhisthira for the sacrifice in accordance with the tradition set down by standard authorities. The utensils used in the sacrifice were made out of
gold.
Just as in the ancient registry performed by Lord Varuna, Indra, Brahma, Shiva, and many other planetary rulers. The Siddhas and Gandharvas with their entourages, Vigadharas, great serpents, sages, yakshas, rakshasas, celestial birds, kanaras, charanas, and earthly kings all were invited, and indeed they all came from every direction to the registry of sacrifice of King Yudhisthira, the son of Pandu. They were not in the least astonished to see the opulence of the sacrifice, because Maharaj Yudhisthira was a devotee of Krishna. If Krishna wanted, if he wants to make one, because he's unlimitedly wealthy, if he wants to bestow some wealth upon someone, he can do it in an unlimited way. Prabhupada used to say that his father would tell him, when Krishna wants to take things away from you with his 10 hands, what can you do with your 2 hands? Because how, if you were fighting with someone and he had 10 arms, powerful arms, what could you do? And on the other hand, he would say that if Krishna wants to give you with his 10 hands, what, how much can you accept with your 2 hands? Well, not Krishna, of course, has unlimited ways to give, and he has unlimited ways to take. So one question could be raised. That is, so many questions to be raised. How come the devotees don't generally seem very wealthy? Why doesn't Krishna give them so much? So, there are, of course, many answers to this question. Yes, exactly. Right at the end of the 10th canto. Maharaj quickly asked him, he said, why did Lord Shiva's devotees, they have so much, and Lord Shiva himself is poor, and Vishnu's devotees, the Krishna, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, so he's unlimitedly wealthy, but his devotees are generally poor. So what's going on? He asked, but not so crudely. So that's one question, way of answering it. And then there was another little story that I remember, where one devotee, the devotee who kindly taught me to chant Hare Krishna seriously, Vanuga Prabhu, just opened the temple. He had heard, you know, this that he had heard that yogis knew how to manufacture gold. So he thought that Prabhupada must know how to manufacture gold. So if he could tell us how to manufacture gold, we could get lots of gold and have a nice golden altar for Krishna. And Prabhupada, he said, very innocently, please tell us how to manufacture gold so we can make a nice golden altar for Krishna. And Prabhupada wrote back and said that there is a yogi process where a yogi eats mercury, which was, of course, poisonous, but yogis know how to assimilate that. Actually part of the tantra, actually. It will kill an ordinary person. And then they pass out a special kind of urine from that, and they onto bell metal, the metal that they make bells out of, and it turns into gold. He told that to Rupino, and he said, but don't try it. And he said, because usually, when devotees get gold, they forget about Krishna. So he said, therefore, don't worry, don't bother. Because gold gives us a great intoxication, or not only gold, but wealth. Great intoxication. So the devotees remain poor and humble and unintoxicated. Because as soon as you have a lot of wealth, you start dreaming, I can do this and I can do that, and the mind becomes so distracted. And you always want more, but you're always thinking of how to protect it, always an anxiety how to protect it, all the things you could do. If I want to, I could fly here, I could go on a vacation, I could buy a boat, I could buy two boats, I could buy three boats made out of gold. Of course, they make sense, but if I put them in a bigger boat, and put them on top of an airplane, we can travel all over the world, and I can have my own plane and my own pilot, and we can travel here and there, and we could go on vacation, we could float in the Caribbean Sea and just make sure there are guards to protect us, and we could have this and we could do that, and I'd never have to do this. And then, and this person is nice to me, I wonder what he wants from me, I know what he wants, my gold. Just anxiety, continuous anxiety. So, therefore, Prabhupada said, devotees get cold, they tend to forget about Krishna. And it was Yudhisthira, actually, who asked. Maharaj Prickett asked. But then, I think, Maharaj Prickett asked Yudhisthira, Maharaj Prickett asked Sukadev. And Sukadev says, my special mercy. When somebody surrenders to me, I make them completely dependent on them. That's my special favor. priests as powerful as gods perform the Radha Sudhi sacrifice for 10 Yudhisthira in accordance with the Vedic assumptions, just as the demigods had previously performed it for Varuna. On the day of extracting the Soma juice, King Yudhisthira properly and very attentively worshipped the priests and the most exalted personalities of that assembly. So that's what had to happen on that day, and that's where we'll begin tomorrow. So it was, the ceremony was already beginning. And they had to worship they had to do everything perfectly. That's the thing about them doing these type of ritualistic activities, unless you do perfectly, you don't get the result. And sometimes you can get the exact opposite result if there's an imperfection. An example of that was with the birth of Dhritarashtra. There was just a slight mispronunciation of the mantra by Twasta, who was Vishwakarma. And instead of getting a person who was inimical to Indra, you got a person who would producing the sacrifice to whom Indra was inimical. So I have slight mispronunciation of the mantra. Any questions or comments? Today.
Another day.
The last day.
Where did they go?
Where did who go?
Kings.
Went home. Yes. They went back to their kingdoms.
What would that mean? Like Bihar, right?
And that's where Magda is, but it doesn't mean their kingdoms were in Bihar. But it's was Yudhisthira who asked the question to Krishna about why is it the devotees are tend to be poor. Sukadeva asked it to Sukadeva, and Sukadeva's reply said, Your grand uncle, Yudhisthira had asked the same question to Krishna himself.
So it was
Did you ever see the list?
I just remember the gist of it was that he said that most people think that...
But I think it's in relationship to the Radha Surya sacrifice. That's the point, that he was made the emperor. So that includes all those things, being the emperor.
But is that particular saying there, that he was saying how people think that when they worship Krishna...
A little indirectly, he was saying it in the positive. And that's what's directly said. Said that I want people to know that by worshiping you, everything this has become, all the success has come. It might be in one of the commentaries. Or pretty sure it was in relationship to the Radha Surya sacrifice. Any questions? Parasamuni, who also attended. Whose mother was Satyavati, and Satyavati became sort of the wife of Bhishma's father. So
Narasimha Rai's mother was Satyavati.
Said that Narasimha Muni had a child by Satyavati, who, and that child was Vyasadeva. And that same Satyavati ended up marrying Mara Santanu, who was the mother of Bhishma. So Bhishma and Vyas, and what was the child's name? And then who's Bhishma's brother? Yeah, so and they had, and then there was a request that when he passed away, that the brother could see the child, and that was allowed in those times in the womb of the wife of the Chitradirya. So then Satyavati said about Vyasadeva, and there was another child I had from my sense to his brother of the Chitradirya. And the three children, and the two wives of Ambika. I don't remember the three names, the three wives of the Chitradirya.
Ambika and
Ambika. Yeah, which means mother, something like mother, little mother, littlest mother, or something. Something like that. The three sisters who are supposed to be married to. Who's the king they're supposed to be married to? Well, Ambika was someone who wasn't very nice. Amba. She's supposed to be married to one of the ones who was opposed to Krishna. She had fallen in love with him. And then when Bhishma carried her off, she couldn't marry him. So Mahabharata stories, he wouldn't take her. She didn't want to marry the Chitradirya. So then she went to, and then Bhishma let her go to the husband, the person who she wanted to marry, the king who she wanted to marry. House, and that he wouldn't marry her because Bhishma had carried her away and she'd spend the night in Vichitravirya's palace, even though she was, didn't do anything wrong. And then when she went back, Bhishma wouldn't accept her to marry Vichitravirya because she had just spent the night with this king, even though she didn't do anything wrong. And then no one would marry her. And she was so angry that she went to the forest and performed austerities. It ended up dying and becoming Shikhandi, who ended up killing Bhishma. So it's a long story, long and complicated story. And Bhishma knew that if she had died, I'm going to kill him, gaining power. So he performed austerities in the forest, became a yogini, just to kill Bhishma to get revenge. So it was his fault.
Quite messy, isn't it? Life.
What?
Life can become quite messy.
It must become.
Because in a sense, on one day, in a sense, he was carrying out his duty.
Who?
Bhishma.
When you carry out your duty, you might trample on other people's desires. Everyone collides with each other in this world. So therefore, Mahaprabhu has requested us to be tolerant, because it's the nature of the world. If you don't become tolerant, then your mind's always plotting and scheming and angry and etc. etc. And therefore, you can't peacefully chant. One needs a great cultivation of tolerance born of the mode of goodness. 20 minutes. Exciting happen in the land of Telstra today. If all that bandwidth and you can't use it, yeah, it's not enough to do with it. What to do must be frustrating. I mean, for people, yeah, they must download all kinds of crazy things just to use it.
Actually, there are firewalls, so you can just download anything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they stop you from doing that.
Yeah.
But everyone, you're all computer people, they know how to work around that, yeah? Honor among thieves. The Prophet told that story that these thieves went and they stole a bunch of things and then they went to a place in the forest and said, Let's divide it up honestly.
Morally.
In a fair way. Not be cheaters.